auspicious.
Yeah, what does that say from a numerology perspective?
Oh, well, six is a birthing number.
Episode number one to hear the numerology.
Pregnant, right?
Did you listen to Amanda's? Did you listen to Amanda's?
Yes, I did. Okay. Six is perfect. Yeah, I feel like I just gave birth.
Yeah, that's it. That's the birthing number.
Okay,
here we go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Pandemic Podcast. This is episode number six. You've got Derek here, Michael, and I'm going to hand it off to Mimi to introduce our guest today.
Okay. So hi, everyone. I'm going to introduce my dear friend, Jessica Carson, who I've known probably for about 7 years. We met on the yoga platform. She's a yoga teacher, and her mom and Jessica have been practicing together on virtually from Atlanta.
From Lancaster, Pennsylvania, from Amish country.
Wait, that's the new thing. So start over again. Start the podcast again. I thought your mom was in Atlanta.
So they just moved back. So I was born and raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, like an Amish country, and they just moved back here.
Okay. See? Yes. Okay. Okay.
So many updates, so many things.
Okay. So are we going with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hell, I thought I knew everything. Okay. So what I want to say, I do want to read this because I find this really, really interesting. I'm going to read a little bit of Jess's bio. So Jess Carson is currently Georgetown University's first expert in residence and the director of innovation at the American Psychological Association. Previously, she held positions at a startup and venture firm and was a research fellow at the National Institutes of Health. Jess just put out a book, and it's called Wired This Way. I'm going to read a couple sentences. Creators are wired complexly. And their lightest moments, they are passionate, ambitious, intuitive, and possess a host of other bright qualities. But entrepreneurial spirits are often victim of a darker side of their nature. They are particularly prone to mental health issues, stress-related issues, illnesses, and other vulnerabilities of the mind, body, and spirit. Which that speaks to me in a big way. So I'll let Michael say something and then we'll get going. So thanks so much for being with us, Jess.
Oh my gosh, of course. Long time coming.
I've got nothing to say. I don't know why she handed it off to me. I mean, I got plenty to say, but I want to hear from you. Can you maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, Mimi just gave a big, it's a big project that you just completed.
Yes.
But I guess stepping back in the scope, well, why don't you tell us a little bit how you came to that project, and then we'll kind of start interweaving what the heck is happening now into
what
you've learned. Yeah.
Well, so it's actually kind of funny. I was literally, just as you were speaking, Mimi, thinking about how we've really known each other through the whole arc of my, like, the highs and lows of my own personal journey. And it was my own personal journey that brought me to the work that I'm doing. And I was just thinking about being on your Costa Rica retreat a few years ago and being just, like, in the absolute depths of, like, a personal existential crisis and arriving at the table in Costa Rica and just sitting down and like bawling. And that was when I met your sister, Amanda, who was on the last episode. But, you know, it was actually during that trip and like during that period of my life that I really shifted from an old way of being into a new way of being, which really catalyzed the work that I'm doing now. So during that trip, I was transitioning from a role in venture capital into the role that I'm in now. And so basically it was through my own really dark night of the soul that I came to this work. So struggling with my own mental health challenges, stress-related illness, emotional distress, spiritual distress, that made me very curious about the dark and the light within the entrepreneurial spirit. And because I was working in venture capital and I was around so many creators and so many entrepreneurs, I became very aware of these patterns in their thinking, emoting, behaving, interacting, that on one hand were just so tremendously impressive, you know, the passion, the risk tolerance, the confidence, the charisma, all of these wonderful qualities that I was starting to learn I possessed myself. But all of those qualities also had this quite dark undercurrent of burnout, of obsession, of perfectionism, of ego, of inauthenticity, of depressive tendencies. And so I got very curious, both from seeing it in the people that I was exposed to through work, but also in running into this brick wall of my own and having to learn through some really hard lessons that largely actually came through my body. And Mimi knows this about my journey. I had to you know, learn a lot of these lessons the hard way through my body. And really it was yoga that helped give me the tools to move some of these energies, some of these emotions out and through me and really bring me back into alignment. Yoga was one of the many practices that did that for me. But now, many years later, I am so thrilled that through my background in psychology and neuroscience and mindfulness and startups and venture capital and what seemed like a, you know, ass backward journey when I was in the middle of it, really turned into this beautiful confluence of skills and experiences and perspectives that inform the work that I'm doing today. So helping creators and entrepreneurs understand their mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual selves so that they can show up as whole creators. Because there is nothing wrong with the way that we are wired. We are not broken. We are not bad. We do not need to be fixed or cured. But what we do need is a set of practices and tools to help us embark on a path of self-study and self-understanding and self-acceptance and self-care. And so that kind of lends us really interestingly into this time that we're in now, because as you mentioned, my book is being birthed in this time, in this quarantine. And so, you know, I think it's brilliant we're having this conversation now, because as much as I want to shake my fist at the heavens and be like, why am I birthing my book in the middle of a pandemic? It's also in this period of darkness and isolation that we have time to do this inner work. So really, there is no better time than the present.
Absolutely.
So what, I mean, I get really curious right away with what you just said, because there is, there seems to be in most of the great artists that I have cursed, not as deeply as you and in creators, that there is this dark element. And if, on a side note, I've always wondered, like, is that necessary for that creative energy to come through? And relating it to the pandemic now, there is there's a focus on the darkness. And then actually it's been remarkable in most of the guests we've had, and maybe it's just the guests we've had, but that there is this optimism in some ways of like that there is almost like a tear in the construct of what we've been working. And there's this potential for creativity to come through right now in new ways of being.
Yes.
So given everything you've studied, you know, about the individual, how would you relate that? Like, what's your feeling on this macro sense of what's going on?
Yes. So you just said so many things that I love and I want to touch on. So I just need to make a list in my mind, because first was wondering if creators almost need to have this darkness and this complexity and this internal contradiction in order to thrive. And that is something that I address in my book. So to touch on that briefly, the answer is yes. And so there is an abundance of, like we shared, mental health issues, stress-related illness, emotional dysregulation among entrepreneurs, among creators, and attention the press is covering it, it makes it seem like this is something that's happening right now. Like there's this dramatic increase. And frankly, there's probably no increased prevalence of these issues among creators and among entrepreneurs. Now, the stresses of entrepreneurial and creative work can certainly exacerbate any underlying issues you may have, any underlying vulnerabilities that are waiting to kind of be activated. But the truth is, it is largely a self-selecting kind of mechanism. So it's not that people are self-selecting into creative endeavors despite their sensitivities and their vulnerabilities, but because of those sensitivities and vulnerabilities. And if we look at any of these mental health challenges or stress-related illnesses that entrepreneurs face, they actually all come with incredible adaptive advantages. So individuals who are more likely to have depression are also going to be able to engage in really focused analytical thinking. They're able to sort of withdraw their energy from the distraction of society and focus on executing one or two big projects. Or people who are prone to substance abuse are going to have more of an addictive wiring pattern in their brain, which is rooted in the dopaminergic system, the neurotransmitter dopamine, which also makes them more prone to risk tolerance and novelty seeking and sensation seeking and curiosity and openness to experience and all of these wonderful things that they probably wouldn't be creators if they weren't wired that way. So, and I could go on and on and on about that, but just I wanted to touch on that because that was really cool you shared that. But in terms of the way that I'm understanding this period that we're in now and how it relates to both me personally, but also the work that I'm doing. So what's really interesting about this period that we're in now is we've sort of been forced into this collective depression, if you will, right? So it's like we were all out there going to yoga class, going to happy hour, doing our thing, going to work, socializing, going on dates. And now all of a sudden, we're all sort of being forced into this depressive state where we're not going outside, we're not really interacting with our work in the same way, with our fitness in the same way, with our social lives in the same way. And while that may be difficult for some people to make that adjustment, there's actually a silver lining to sort of having that more depressed energy and depressed affect. And that is the ability to slow down, to mindfully observe your environment, and to focus on one or two key issues, key problems, or key ideas where you would like to channel and focus your energy. And the cool thing is that when we look at pandemics across history, they were almost always followed by these incredible creative epochs. So if you look at the bubonic plague, it was shortly followed by the Italian Renaissance. When you look at the Great Plague of London, Isaac Newton, during his 2 years in quarantine, came up with his theories around gravity and calculus and optics. The Spanish flu in the South was followed by the Harlem Renaissance because people escaped the South to avoid the illness and to avoid slavery and ended up moving into the North and bringing with them the Harlem Renaissance. And so what's really cool is sort of taking these examples, these templates for how we can use darkness and isolation and slowing our energy down as a creative mechanism. And it's no coincidence that many of the most productive minds in all of history have been touched by depression. And it's because it gives them this ability to kind of go in and out of quarantine in sort of a self-imposed way. And so I will share that when I was writing my book, and this was way before COVID-19 happened, there were significant stretches of the time when I was writing the book that I was probably in a depressed affect kind of place. And I wasn't going out as much and I wasn't going to yoga as much, but I was actually much more creatively productive in those periods because I wasn't channeling my energy into other places. And so what I would suggest is that people sort of reframe this opportunity as really we're going into the womb, we're going into darkness, we're going into the earth, we're being planted into the soil, we're being given the opportunity for isolation and darkness, and also the opportunity and the gift of time. Because with those combined variables, what you will inevitably get is rebirth, right? It's like what happens after a wildfire, what happens after, any other kind of major disruption to an ecological system. You get death and decay. You get the elimination of what is unnecessary, and then you get rebirth.
I have a question. So is there what might, because there's a difference between withdrawing, pulling yourself into a depressive state, kind of as you described that, and sort of the trauma that's associated with being forced into this kind of environment. So is there a way that you, like, how do you kind of rectify that, or are there ways for that you want to suggest to like look at it or to navigate that? Because I do kind of disagree. This is not just sitting, you know, pulling ourselves back in. There's a significant amount of somatic and psychological trauma associated with it. I don't want to kind of forget about or gloss.
Oh no, of course. I mean, and look, as someone with a sweet, sensitive nervous system, I am no stranger to the psychological effects of things that feel out of our control. And I have deep, deep embodied empathy for that. So a few things. One thing is that we largely experience trauma from situations that feel out of our control or where there's a strong expectation that things should and will look the same on the other side. And so I think a big part of what will keep people of healthy mind, body, and spirit right now is being okay with the fact that things will look different and bracing themselves for the fact that, you know, after a wildfire, even if things do grow back, they grow back in a different way and oftentimes in a healthier way. But it's not, you know, there has to be a looseness in terms of attachment to the outcome. Also preparing our, so the way that trauma gets internalized in the body is when there's, when something is happening outside of our control and our nervous systems are in that fight or fight place. And so that energy gets stuck in our body. So what all of you have this incredible power and potential to do as healers, as teachers, as guides, is to be reminding people that like, it's okay to be feeling negative emotion, but use the tools of yoga, use the tools of breath work, use the tools of meditation to help keep your nervous system in as relaxed of a state as possible, so things can be moving through you rather than getting stuck in you. And so this is an extremely important time to be expressing the way we feel, to be engaging in creative projects, to be, you know, painting, to be, you know, writing, to be finding ways, finding technologies of self to move our energy out and through. So, and reminding our nervous systems that even though things are out of control, that we are fundamentally safe. So yeah. I acknowledge what you're saying.
Completely. No, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And I like that you kind of brought up, you know, I'm in recovery. And to bring up like, it's both a good thing and a precarious cliff to be on, to be in a situation like this when, you know, so many of us have coping mechanisms that we don't even think about, you know, like going out to happy hour is a good one, fine. Going to yoga, you know, going to yoga can even be considered a coping mechanism. And when you take away our coping mechanisms, which is essentially one of the things that's happened, like even going, sitting on your, you know, shared rooftop could be a healthy coping mechanism. But when something like this takes away your coping mechanisms, then there is this, like, there is, you are forced into sitting with that stuff that you may have non-harmful ways of avoiding. You know, like, sure, my addiction was a harmful way of avoiding some of that stuff. And, you know, we find, you know, Russell Brand's book talks a lot about how we're all addicted to things. And so we find other ways to cope, you know, and some of them are great ways to cope, gardening,
yes,
running, you know, going to fitness classes with each other. But we've, all of those have been sort of like actively removed from our arsenal.
Many of them have, but many of them haven't. And I agree. So one thing that I've been speaking a good bit about lately is the fact that right now we are going to see a major uptick in addictive behaviors of all kinds. So whether that's addiction to alcohol, addiction to food, addiction to porn, addiction to, you know, whatever it is, attuned to our social media.
To making podcasts.
On one hand, sounds like a party, right? But on the other hand, like, especially when we have nothing else to do, and I'm doing air quotes for people who can't see me right now, nothing else to do, we can come to rely on those artificially comforting mechanisms far too greatly. So one thing that I would definitely caution people of in this time is to be very mindful, not judgmental of their, the little voice of addiction in their mind, but just to be aware of it, right? Because it's like, you know, for example, my mom and I, every night we've been having our glass of wine, but it's like, I could see a world in which 3 months from now, it easily goes to 2 or 3 glasses of wine. And so like being very mindful about that. And yes, I do agree that many of our healthy coping mechanisms have been taken away in a sense. And what this is doing, you can think of us all kind of like snow globes. And for the past, really our whole lives, we've just been in this perpetual state of being shaken up. And so you couldn't really see what was in the snow globe because there was all these like particles floating around us. And now what's happening is we're like, all of that is settling and we're like, oh shit, this is what we're left with. This is me, this is the whole thing. And so a lot of people who haven't done the, you know, whether you want to call it the shadow work or done the self-study, done the personal growth and development, are going to have to look at some interesting little critters inside of themselves during this time, because that all has the opportunity to surface. And maybe it's sort of the, you know, the dark philosopher in me that like gets excited by that, because I'm like, oh, cool, people will have the opportunity to like do what they've been putting off for their whole lives, which is develop a relationship with themselves. You know, and it is interesting, like thinking about generations gone by and why there was these eras of really rich thought leadership around philosophy and around psychology and around society. And it's because they didn't have much else to do other than think about how to take care of themselves, how to understand themselves, how to honor the soul, the body, the spirit, the mind that they had been gifted with. And so now we have the opportunity to go back to basics, and I'm not going to pretend like it's not going to be really fucking scary for some people.
I love that. That snow globe metaphor is brilliant. That's such I think it's super clear, really, really, something people can connect with. Yeah.
And I, again, I think that the three of you sitting here, because of the nature of your work, probably have the, you know, the biggest calling right now in terms of like keeping all of our nervous systems like in a stable or as stable as possible place. Because, right, that is the component that turns pain into suffering. That is the component that turns a negative experience into trauma, is the way that your nervous system is interacting with the stressor.
And I think it's fascinating, you've been looking at this stuff for a while now, and in sort of how a lot of minds, you know, your book is about how people are wired, right? So how a lot of minds take their inherent, their like natural, I think the word predilection's wrong. But it's kind of there towards, you know, this internal process that can be possibly disruptive and messy, and what they do with it. And so do you think, this is like totally leading question, whatever. Do you think that all that work that you've been doing, what you've been looking at, applies in a particular way to the environment that we're in right now?
I mean, 1,000,000,000%.
You're a mathematician, right?
Yeah. So basically, what the book is at its essence is a user's manual to the entrepreneurial spirit and the creative spirit, and it is a guide to self-study. So what the book actually does is it, you know, the first few chapters provide some background research and context on some of these common challenges that creators face. But the primary bulk of the book, the primary 10 chapters in the book, explore 10 different creator archetypes. Each of these archetypes is based on a personality characteristic that creators exhibit more of than non-creators. So things like passion, things like intuition, things like charisma, like ego, like achievement orientation, like openness to experience, all these different things, and explores the light qualities of that archetype and the dark qualities of that archetype, and tools for integration, tools for self-study. And so basically it's like a guide to read in quarantine, so you can, aspect of yourself by aspect of yourself, understand why you may be struggling with certain things or reacting in certain ways or being triggered by certain things or having resistance towards certain things, and hopefully use this time as a time for healing and a time for self-understanding that can last with you your whole life.
Well, I'd like to just, because this is hitting home to me, like I've just been hit on the head with a sledgehammer. So just because I'm dealing with all of this right now, because I was hoping in the pandemic and the time, the quarantine, that I would slow down, and I'm taking on more stuff than I ever have. And that's my issue. That's my, like, that's my, whatever, which archetype am I right now? The one that's the overworked?
Oh my goodness.
The one that like schedules.
Yeah. Yes, you are the achievement oriented. It is the ambitious creator, the fiery creator. You are, yes, no, I mean, and I know that about you, and that's your, but it's like also that's your blessing and that's your burden, right? It's like you wouldn't be where you are, Mimi, if you didn't have that aspect of you. But it's also, you know, something that you have to watch out for, because it can lead you into a state of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual distress, right? And so, and it's funny you say that, because I actually have been taking on more projects now than I ever have, because I actually feel like for me, and maybe this is because I've been doing like the more lower depressive dark work in the past, but I feel like now I'm in a place of great energy, of great creativity, but I'm only pursuing opportunities because my energy feels renewed as I go. And I think that, you know, as yoga teachers, we're really giving people a tool for energetic regulation, like how to understand your energy and listen to when something is depleting or renewing you. And so I don't think it's wrong to take on more tasks and activities and projects in this time.
As long as you take a day off. At least one day off, right? Is that,
at least.
Can we get that on the air somewhere?
On the air, just in writing,
at
yeah.
One day.
Talking about anyone in particular.
I'm not naming any names or anything. But right. Like one, like I feel like you might be a good person to tell us if taking a day off is helpful.
Let me continue to speak. I'd like to say one more thing. I do want to say, because I feel like this is, I feel like for all of us, the three of us here on this podcast, are going through things in a different way. And I am finding that I'm more inspired than I ever have to do things that I'm truly passionate about. And I'm able to say no to the things that I don't want to do anymore, right? Because there's a different confinement. There's a different, the choices are different than they have before. You know, Michael yes. is taking on more of his passion projects. And Derek is doing, you know, more of his passion stuff. And so there is that time, but there's also the propensity to do too much. And that's what I'm trying to, and we don't have a ton of time to talk about. That's why I'm going to schedule a session with you. We'll have a one-on-one coaching session for my stuff through the lens of your book and the entrepreneurial spirit. So
in which she'll tell you to take a day off.
I do a component of work every day, but like I don't do work every day. You know, for me, writing doesn't feel like work, or putting together programming doesn't feel like work. So I'll do that on the weekend. So I think it just depends on, again, sort of your, what renews you, what depletes you. Because to me, I actually feel really tired on the day that I don't do any creative work. So it's just, you know, it's learning how to regulate your own energy and finding that balance that's right for you. Now, should you teach yoga classes every day? I don't know. Maybe you would feel exhausted and sad and grumpy if you didn't. Like, it's to each her own.
But sometimes it's okay to feel exhausted and sad and grumpy. It's one of those feeling bumps.
and I think you're pointing to something interesting, which is this internal honesty of really knowing what is habitual and what is generative.
Yep.
Because what for me, at least, the predilection is what used to feel generative can just become habitual. Mm. And then you're just doing it because it you had an idea that it used to feel good. And I think, I love the way you framed that, because I think in the scope of this, what's happening now, there's a lot of habits being disrupted.
Yes.
And opportunity to really, figure out or to assess what brings life and what doesn't.
Ooh, I love that. And I'm curious what, so in the routines getting disrupted, I can actually see that as both depleting energy, but also being very restorative, right? Because it's forcing you to get out of things that are broken and things that just don't work anymore and things that were never serving you to begin with. So,
like capitalism. I mean,
to name one,
just one for you.
Right away.
That's right. Podcast.
It was right there on the. It was right there on the table. I didn't know how not to. Yeah.
Sorry, Jess. I get sidetracked sometimes and talk about.
I love it. By all means.
Aha, there it is. I get sidetracked.
That's right. I don't want to talk about it.
Sorry, Jess.
That's great.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And I'm the kind of person who, and I appreciate that this is not everyone's view. I believe everything happens for a reason. I think that timing is always exactly when it's meant to. I think that everything that happens to us that is bad and awful and scary is rich with learning potential and opportunity and personal growth. And that the more that we can not just like swipe and scroll our way through what's happening right now, but like really get curious about it and trusting that we are going to be okay, you know, and like really what I've been doing, and this is a practice that I've developed over the past few years and was not always easy for me because I am, you know, I'm a recovering perfectionist, hyper self-critical kind of gal. But talking to myself as if I'm talking to my own child, and I don't have a child, I have a cat. But you know, when I feel my nervous system revving up into that place where my mind is spiraling or I can't sleep or whatever it is, I will sit and I will close my eyes, and out loud to myself, I will start talking to myself like my own mother. And there has not been a single time I have done that I haven't immediately given myself the wisdom that I didn't even know that I needed, and giving my nervous system the healing that it definitely needed. So I would say, you know, and the first few times it's going to sound silly and you're going to feel like an idiot and you're going to look around and see if anyone's watching you, even if you're all alone in your apartment. But it's a really beautiful, easy practice that anybody can do. And frankly, I think all of our inner children need a hug right now.
I okay. love that.
You brilliantly segued and jumped the segue gun.
Yes, you did. I love great. It. Well, I say, because it's the bell is following. You've already, I think, stated.
At least one.
At
step.
Least one, yeah. And this is where we're coming to the end and just wrapping.
I just intuited it.
Yeah, there you go.
Is three things that you are doing in your practice mm-hmm. to kind of work with the energies that are happening right now. Like what practices are you in? And you just named one, which I hadn't heard before, which I really appreciate.
Yes. Yeah, so first would be talking to yourself like you are talking to your child. Oh gosh, there's so many. So second, I mean, I just have been sensing that this period that we're in right now is deeply, deeply feminine. So looking at feminine, masculine, energetic. So right now, because the period of quarantine, going into darkness, needing nurturing, going into a place of creation, going into a place of reflection, that is a very feminine energy. Now, the fear, the control, the aggression, the trying to fix things, that is more masculine energy. And that's not to say that like masculine energy is good and feminine energy is bad. That's not true. But I've been trying to lean into my feminine archetypal qualities even more in this time. And doesn't matter what gender you are, what sexual orientation you are, we all are comprised of masculine, feminine qualities. So getting really curious about how you can cultivate more of that femininity in yourself right now. So qualities of the feminine archetype are things like nurturance, compassion, softness, forgiveness, patience, rest, friendship, collaboration. You know, you can Google these things, but again, no matter what your gender, what your sexual orientation might be, getting really curious about how to soften into that side of yourself even more, because that will help keep you anchored in the sort of masculine control fear thing that's going on right now and is sort of dominating the response to the pandemic. And then third, and I think is probably an extension of both of the things I've shared. So I am not good at art, but I try and I really enjoy it. So what we actually did was when we made one of our grocery runs one day, we got watercolors and we got Play-Doh and we got pens and pencils and crayons and markers. And every day we've just been having like an arts and crafts time, like no joke, with the proficiency of like a second grader. But I have found it so enormously healing, and there's a reason that like art therapy is a thing. And it's a thing because art is a way to take emotions that are stored and blocked that we cannot explain, we cannot articulate, and channel it into a different medium. And then of course a different medium can also be your yoga practice. But with your yoga practice, I would also be mindful to get curious. And this is the last, this is like recommendation 3.5. But if there's a yoga practice that normally resonates for you when life is normal, and for some reason it's not resonating with you now, just be mindful of that. Because if you are usually like really like a slow practice, but you're now feeling like you have a lot of energy you want to move out and through, maybe do a more rigorous class or vice versa. So don't have so many expectations around like that what you're going to be doing now is what you've always done. And that includes your physical and movement practice.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So nice.
You're welcome.
This is such a fun chat. This is great.
Yes, thank you. I've been wanting to get my paintings out from under my bed, so it's on. It's on.
Aww,
thanks for coming and seeing us. And
yes,
Derek will talk about the show notes.
Yeah, so we'll post a link to your website, to your book in our show notes, and then hopefully we're going to start posting a quick recap of our 3 points. So,
okay.
We'll get those 3 points from you, and we'll post them as basically some like homework for our listeners to do.
Homework.
That's a terrible word. Let's rename it.
Opportunities.
Quarantunities.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, we just made up a word.
Not to be confused with quarantinis, yeah, which is a different. No, that's
you can
the
have
drink.
A quarantini while you're doing your quarantunities.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, this is going off the rails. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you soon.